Hello, my loves. I have 7,000 things to tell you. So here's what's on the menu. We're going to talk about processing grief. I want to share with you something that just happened and just talk about it. Talk about some shame squirrels because they're up right now and how I am moving through that. Talk about my personal grief process and then show you how I got there, how I created my process, so you can create yours. About a week or so ago, I was talking with a friend of mine about processing grief, and we were talking about how it's not really taught, or like it wasn't taught to us. So grief is a universal experience, and yet a lot of us stay in the dark about it or remain in the dark or just don't know, which is fair because this not, at least where I'm from, I definitely did not learn this. I had a lot of experience with grief, like starting from a very young age. I just didn't develop this process until I was an adult and was faced with some of the most intense grief of my entire life. So this, like the processing of grief and thinking about that and thinking about my own process and like reviewing it was loud in my head when I, a few days ago, received a text message from my dad telling me that his sister, my most beloved aunt, was in the hospital. Things were not going well. I was at work when I got this text. It felt like a shock. And I continued to work a little bit, and then I just had to like stop and take a breath, take a beat, go to the bathroom. I cried my face off, got it together, went back out to work, and just sort of felt a little bit off all day. I continued to feel off and a little bit anxious because this felt way more serious than anything else that's happened before with her. So he texted me on the second and told me that she had passed away the previous night. And now once again, I am at work. And was there was just a part of me that was expecting that text, like knew it was a matter of time. It's just like the, forgive me while I fumble through telling this story. It's the finality of it that even if we feel that it might be on the way or that it's certain that it's coming, the finality of it, like with that comes a very specific type of shock. So I read the text and I put my phone back in my pocket and I continued to work thinking, what now? What do I want? What do I need? So I worked out that I was going to call him on my break and talk to him. And so I did. And he explained all the details in my very dad-like fashion. He's very good at just like, you know what? Here are the facts. And I am crying my face off. He answered all my questions. In those moments, it's like I'm just taking in what he's saying and had to go back to work, which just feels crazy, right? Because it's like this piece of my world, this piece of my life has just stopped. But the world as a whole didn't just stop. Everybody else has got their lives and they've got their things, and I'm at work, so my options are to stay and work or go. So I found my boss and I just told her, hey, this just happened. I decided I wanted to work the rest of my shift, but I needed the next day off, to which she was very precious and very wonderful and let all that happen. So the rest of the day was just like this very strange blur. And it still is. It's still a very strange blur. And my particular brand of grief is sadness and heaviness mixed with some neutrality and still keeping to my routines. But then there's this sharp flashes of anger that come in that are very difficult to move through without, taking it out on someone else or another person. It's just, which is, no one's fault that I'm grieving, of course, but it's just, it's not, those things are as practiced as I am with grief, these things are very difficult to move through. I said, or I told these stories on my Instagram stories, but I want to tell you as well. I just want to tell you about my very precious aunt. She and my mother's sister were friends in high school, and they decided to set my parents up on a blind date. And it worked. It worked. My parents are still married. They were married on February 10th, 1979, I think, if I have that date correct. So, fast forward some years, I came along. Fast forward some more years, my brother came along. When my mom was pregnant with me, my parents didn't find out what gender I was. And they had some names picked out. And when I got here, my aunt suggested that they name me Melissa, which I'm eternally grateful for. I love my name. When I was looking for my very first job, I ended up working two jobs. I worked at a restaurant and then I worked for my aunt. She owned a Hallmark store. I loved reading the cards there. I'm still like such a card slut. It's like a whole thing for me to go find cards for the people that I love. So, yeah, loved reading the cards. I'm also completely obsessed with Hello Kitty stuff. And she sold some Hello Kitty things in the store, and she would save some of those. She would save those boxes for me if she could to put out during my shift, which I appreciated. And my cousin worked for her, my grandmother worked for her. And we just had a good time. Just had a good time. Some of like my loudest memories of being at the store, besides like working with my cousin and just like laughing hysterically at all times and connecting with the other lovely women that work there, was going to pick up my paychecks. Like, I don't even think direct deposit was a thing back then. So I have to go pick up my paycheck and take it to the bank. But I just remember, because I would go after school and I would just talk her face off. And she was always so patient and so kind. She always asked me good questions. She was always just very, very much here, very much present with me. I felt very loved and very seen and very accepted. And it felt like I had that space to relax and just exhale, even though, and some of this is up now, I felt, this is up now as I'm telling you this. I felt some shame when it came to talking so much, taking so much space. But she allowed that space to be taken, I felt that she encouraged my words or my self-expression or whatever it was that was going on. She was very much there. And then fast forward a few more years, my cousin, her son, was dating this sweet girl named Kate. We all loved Kate. And I, at the time, was keeping my secrets about moving to Chicago from Atlanta. I was job hunting. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to tell anybody in my family. I just didn't want to be talked out of it. I was very set on making this move. But my aunt emailed me and asked me if I would be interested in meeting Kate's brother, Rob. I did not know that Kate had a brother. So I was like, okay, yeah. So she gave him my phone number and he called me and we talked for a little while and then we made a date for coffee before I had to go to work on a Sunday. And that date was February 10th, my parents' wedding anniversary. And I just thought, like, how precious that was. That she set up my parents, and I still call Rob the love of my life. And yeah, just the sweetness, the preciousness, the wonderfulness of all of that. I don't, other than precious and sweet and special, I don't have other words to describe the depth of the feelings I have when I think about this. If you've listened to the first episode of this podcast, I talk about Rob and how he is the reason I write erotica. Our what would have been 18th anniversary, was February 10th, and then, of this year, his death anniversary, which also 18 years, is April 20th. I still write erotica, as you know. It's still erotica is also the love of my life. But it's interesting, like every time these anniversaries come around, I, reflect on my work and where it originated from and how it's evolved over the years. When I came out and told the internet that, this is the work I do, it was the end of 2012. I started writing, in February of 08. I told the internet, told Facebook, told everybody, and was met with a lot of anger and shame, particularly from my mom's side of the family. And yeah, I don't think necessarily that my aunt got it or really wanted to get it, which is fair. And same thing, like with my dad, he was sort of like, okay, look, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to know about it, which is fair. That's absolutely fair. I really wasn't planning on talking to my family about it. It's just like we were all connected on Facebook, and I figured there was a 50% chance that they would see it. The first platform that I posted work to is Literatica, and that work is still there, y'all. It's still there. You want to see some of the earliest work? Check it out. I'm still strawberry smut cakes over there. But even though, my dad and my aunt, this is not for them, I still felt respected. I still felt loved, which was definitely, it has been a theme my entire life, especially with my aunt. I felt that I was just loved unconditionally, that she saw me inside out, that she saw my inherent goodness. And it wasn't about like what I was doing or not doing or anything like that. Is she like saw past my humanity. And loved the, for lack of a better terms, like the loved the energy that animates my humanity, which is an incredible gift, an unbelievably meaningful. It means like absolutely everything to me. I said this too on Instagram. Like there are literally no words that I could ever come up with to fully describe how much I have felt loved by her, for the last like 4.5 decades. Like my whole life, she's always been there. And being the spiritual person I am, I know she's still here. But to see her, to hug her, to hear the sound of her voice. That's not a thing anymore. And I keep thinking about like the last time I saw her. I was in Atlanta a couple of years ago. It's the strangest thing when you look at something in hindsight, like we just never know when the last time is going to be. The last time we'll get to say the words, I love you, or thank you. The last time we get to hug someone or tell them what they mean to us. And this is how life is. We don't live forever. It's like I know, but it never like fully eases the hurt that comes from losing someone, regardless of how we lose them. And like time is, it's never enough time with them. So that is my story about my aunt. I have noticed while I have wanted, normally I write about these things. Like I feel the things, and so I take the time and the space to write the things, and then I post the things, or sometimes I don't post the things. For whatever reason, with Instagram and here now, I just feel like I need to talk, which is part of my process. We'll get to the process in a minute. But it's the talking and the sharing and the openness and vulnerability that I do my very best to live by. However, with that comes all of my shame squirrels. All the chatter gets really, really loud in my head. The shame says, it's like, no one cares, be quiet. It doesn't matter. It's kind of like my experience doesn't matter. All of that stuff swoops in. It's like there is shame from just being a person, that I should be different other than I am. There's this pressure to be something else, be something other than I am, which I've lived with my entire life. And it's something that I continue to try to peel away and work on and heal from. Holding the shame plus the grief is a brand new experience in this specific capacity, because also prior to even having the conversation with my friend about the processing of grief, prior to my dad texting me, I'm always like doing energy work or spiritual work and all of that. And I've noticed like the quality of my anger in certain instances is very, very sharp and very loud. I was exploring some of that because I had the opportunity to be triggered. And I was, instead of like blaming the other person, which I did a lot of, I'm not gonna lie, but once that calmed down, I started looking at like, okay, what is actually going on? What is this anger? And the anger led to, or the feeling of anger, the experience of anger led to these other things, which then led to this feeling of shame that I'm carrying that's not even mine. I'm looking at all this, I'm peeling all this apart. And I'm like, okay, I see this. I see the origin story. I see what I've done. And I see the result of that. It's not great. I don't love it. I just didn't know what to do with it. So I have my favorite tarot reader on speed dial, basically. Her name is Liz Zamorski. She is the Femme Genius on Instagram. I will tag her in the show notes so you too can receive a phenomenal tarot reading from her. She does email readings for $25. You ask her a question, or you can receive a general reading. But she's incredible, absolutely incredible. So I was just asking her, like, how do I alchemize this? As I asked the question, what I started to hear, my like intuitively, is self-expression. She came back with different things, which all the things are relevant and valid and perfect. This reading that she gave me was perfect. It's so healing to read. Oh my God. So part of this, like while I'm saying all this, is because like the shame that I'm experiencing, instead of hiding and running away, I showed up on Instagram. I'm showing up here and expressing myself. And no one has to be here. No one has to read it, whatever, or listen to me. But it is a way to alchemize that experience so it doesn't eat me alive. So, my grief process, which I put together piece by piece, my goodness, when Rob died. And it's still a process today, but I have new skills. We've got some new things to add. As I was thinking about putting this together, I learned with him, or like when he passed, because the experience was just so unbelievably intense. There was a lot of yapping. I needed to talk to people who were very safe, or that felt really safe to my nervous system. There was a ton, like a ton of self-expression, things that I had never said before. I was talking about to my friends, to my aunt, to my parents. I was yapping. And I noticed, like, yes, the shame was louder then because I didn't have any like skills or tools. So, like, the more I shared, the louder that vulnerability hangover was, the bigger the shame was. But I just kept doing it because I could feel some of that pressure relieving or getting released. I also felt, same thing with my aunt, like with Rob, I felt so loved, like just inside out love. And it wasn't necessarily what he did or what he said, it's how he was with me, how he treated me, and the energy I picked up on from him. So there's a lot of yapping. But at the same time, this is where it gets real tricky when it comes to people. I needed a fair amount of space. Space to be, space to cry, space to exist, space to feel. So sometimes working was really hard. Sometimes working was a blessing, which is still true. Sometimes it's hard. I can do it. I can do it. But sometimes it's really difficult. Sometimes I need that space. So there was a lot of yapping, equal parts yapping and space. There's also a ton of writing. I wrote more than I yapped. Wrote in my journal. I kept a blog back then. I did so much emotional processing. The reason why I started a blog back then was because I was getting a little tired of having to answer the question of how are you, but also like tune into how much space this person could hold. It's exhausting. I was already tired because I'm feeling everything, but then like well-meaning people would ask me things and I would respond, but I could see if I responded without that energetic tuning. And this is what I needed to do for me. I'm not saying this is right for everybody, but for me, it was. Without being able to tune into that, sometimes their responses would sting or would miss the mark so poorly that it felt like I had even more to deal with. So I started the blog. So I would just funnel the people to the blog. If you want to know about this experience and about my life, here it is. And the thing with writing, I've said it a billion times, but like the thing with writing is like it can be the safe space because you don't have to share it. It can just be for you, which my journal was for me. The blog was after I journaled. I would process in my journal, pick out pieces from that, choose to blog about it. That's what I chose to tell the world. The other thing that was super helpful, still is moving my body in some kind of way that is beneficial for that moment. So with Rob, it was running. I mean, I've always been a runner, but I ran so much. I just ran my grief, essentially, besides like writing and yapping the grief, I ran the grief. As I've gotten older, I've pulled away from running a little bit. Don't know why. It was not a conscious decision. I still do it sometimes, but I don't run like long, long distances anymore. The new things that I've added to the list, so we got the yapping, we got the writing, we got the movement of some sort. I think running too is also like, it felt like more of an aggressive form of movement because I could go really fast or not. I could walk sometimes if I wanted to. Like, I really needed that. But now there's less of a need for it. So the movement I've added in now is a lot of walking. Like, I need to walk. We gotta walk the grief now. There's a whole lot of walking. Specifically, like, I live in such a beautiful part of the country, but I definitely want to be in like quieter parts of the city. There are a lot of parks here in Seattle, so it's like being in a park, being with the squirrels, being in nature, the actual squirrels and my brain squirrels, being with the crows, the seagulls, looking at all the pretty things, super helpful. The other form of movement that is pretty new to me now, but has also been extremely helpful, is called Qigong, and it's spelled Qi, next word, Gong. It is a Chinese movement practice to help improve physical, mental, and spiritual health. It's very slow, it's very intentional, it's very, very gentle. And I feel everything when I do it. It's magical. So, highly recommend it. Breath work, also very, very helpful, very important, especially when the bigger waves of grief come up. So when that's happening and it feels extra painful, if I need to cry, I let myself cry. And when the crying slows down, it's tuning into my breath, not being super quick to like jump into something else, but I inhale through my nose for the count of three, and then I exhale for the count of five through my mouth. That tends to slow down the intensity of the hurt. It doesn't, it doesn't necessarily take away the hurt, but it helps calm my system down. There are other types of breath work that are a little sharper, a little more aggressive. I would say tune into what you need, kind of like with the movement practice. Like, sometimes I need the more aggressive style of movement, so I'm gonna run more. And sometimes I just need the slowness, so we're gonna do Qigong. Yoga and walking, also things that I love, those are kind of in the middle. Because yoga, you can make it really intense. You could speed walk and you can do a really intense yoga practice and like do harder things or not, or do like a restorative class or take a stroll. Just be easy with it. And then the last thing, this is something I did this morning actually. I did, I call it psychic school, but I took like a psychic, what was it called? Psychic Tools 101. It was like, I think it was a 6 week class here in Seattle. It's also on Zoom too. I'm totally spacing on the place that did this. It's in Queen Anne. Oh my God. It's called Psychic Tools 101. If you Google that plus Seattle, you'll find it. So you don't have to live here to take the class. You can take it on Zoom when she offers it. But there's like 101, and there's 102, and there's like a year-long program. So in Psychic Tools 101, I learned how to ground my energy. I shared this meditation episode on the podcast. It's episode 12, if you want to investigate that. But I felt today, like lately, I've been feeling really drawn to practicing more of my skills from that. I don't know why. So, which is fine. Like, if I feel pulled to something, I'm going to do it. So, this morning, I felt drawn to look at my notes from class. I'm very skilled at doing grounding work, but there's more that could be practiced. So even like I'm reading all of this, I'm like, okay, yes, all the notes, love to see it. Suddenly, like as I stopped reading and just started to tune into my breath, I could feel my body start to ground. It's like my hips got heavy. I could feel like my heart like almost like pulling down, not in like a not in a bad way. It's almost like the muscles like attached to my collarbones were starting to relax and like pull away from the bones. My neck was relaxing, and I'm like, oh my God, I needed this. I needed this. And then I burst into tears. Wasn't thinking about anything except noticing my body getting very still, very relaxed, very grounded. Like my energy needs to be here with me. And then imagining bringing wherever my energy is outside of me, bringing it all back in. If you listen to the meditation on episode 12, this is going to make more sense because I'm going to lead you through it. But really noticing that and noticing how that felt and just feeling very peaceful. So that's a new thing that we are going to be practicing a little more than usual. The thing, like again, the thing that I feel skilled at is just dropping that cord down into the earth. Less skilled at bringing, like pulling my energy back from people, places, things, experiences, and bringing it back into my body. So we are going to be practicing that. Highly recommend it for you too. Whether you're experiencing grief or not, having your own energy be fully in your body. How do I say it? Like, it makes setting boundaries easier. It makes trusting yourself easier. It makes creativity, self-expression easier because you're all here with you. You're not scattered everywhere. So that is my process. Now, to guide you through creating your own process, grief is a really, even though it's a universal experience, it is a very individual experience. Everybody needs something different. Depending on the type of loss, too, the process can change. Things get added. Things might need to be subtracted depending on what's going on. So here is how I did it and how I continue to do it to add the new stuff to my list. I listened as best I could in as many moments as I could to discern what I needed in any given moment when Rob died. It felt like there was nothing else for me to do except to listen so I could figure out what would be the next best thing. It felt like if I didn't listen, I would be causing harm to myself. There, even then, there was even more, self-judgment and criticism and pressure that came from that. So if that's what's happening to you too, please do not be scared. You are bigger than that. Your shame does not define you. All that shitty ass negative bullshit you got going on in your head is not who you are. They're just thoughts. What's important is that you are listening to your body and to what you need and what you want. I noticed a pattern that in some moments, talking felt really good. In some moments, space felt really good. Sometimes I couldn't help it, like I had to write, I had to say all the things. And other times that got really overwhelming and I had to run. Every single time I tuned into what's right for me now, what's good for me now, and I listened to that answer, my soul, my body, whatever you want to, however you want to call it, whatever, my energy, whatever, learned to trust that I would show up for it. And now it's become, it's very ingrained in me to be like, all right, here we are. We got the sad feelings. Okay, now what? What do we need right now? Do we need to talk to a friend? Are we going for a walk? Are we going to write for a little bit? Because that's the thing now. The hurt and the pain that comes from loss. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the loss of, it doesn't have to be death. It could be the loss of a relationship, the loss of a job, the loss of a life that you had and no longer have, the loss of a potential relationship or the potential in a person. All of those things affect us differently, and they all require our love and our care and our attention. And so when the pain feels overwhelming, when it's stealing your breath, when it's taking up so much space in your mind, and it's hard to discern what it is you need in that moment. This is so cliche, but I'm gonna say it anyway. Tune into your breath, the quality of your breath, which can also feel super difficult. I know, like, when Rob died, I felt like all the air left my lungs. I felt like that all the time. I felt like I couldn't take a deep breath. You can, I'm telling you, because I did and still do when I'm getting taken down by some of these feelings. Like, grief comes in these waves, and you learn to ride the waves through your breath, through letting yourself cry, through letting that anger express in healthy ways. Healthy ways. We are not screaming at people. It's through that and through slowing down that you start to hear yourself. And when you hear yourself, you discover or deepen into what it is that you need to do to support yourself. Like, having my grief process is like having my own personal support group. And I'm just like, okay, I have these tools I can lean on. So yeah, with your process, you are going to listen and you are going to breathe and you're going to like do the next best thing for yourself, the next right thing. And you'll notice as you continue to do that a pattern. And in that pattern, that's showing you, okay, these are the things that are good for me. This is how my grief wants my love and respect and attention. All right, my dears. I hope this was helpful. Thank you forever and ever and always for being here. And I will talk to you soon.